For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Good afternoon. Welcome to another edition of Advantage Connors. Here is always your host, Brett Connors, with my co-host up the rainy coast in Santa Barbara, Jimmy Connors. What is happening today?
Staying dry. That's a, it's a good point. We had rain again this morning, and it's a little break. So I got my bike ride in and took Bogey for a walk, let Stevie out, our cat, to roam around a bit, but it's coming back again. So it's interfering with our golf game. We got to find some dry courses where we can get out and play.
Right. Yep. It's been raining down here too. It's a little, it's definitely overcast. It stopped right now. Gold Dude Isabella had her raincoat on this morning for her morning walk. She was looking fancy, hated every minute of it, but, I like the rain. I know people are getting tired of it, but it's nice to have a little rain, a little something different. And it helps, helps nature, even though we don't collect much of the actual rainwater here in California. It's nice to have once in a while. So, moving on, let's recap our exciting week in the desert. I know our last episode, we had a pretty special episode with our buddy Bjorn Borg, which was awesome, getting the chance to have him on the pod. We didn't even know he was going to be down there. We went down, we didn't really have that much, you know, plans. We were going to golf and hang and watch some tennis and try and get some people on the pod. And we didn't, you know, we're walking in and someone's like, hey, did you know Bjorn's here? Did you see Bjorn? And we're like, wow, I didn't even know he was here.
Yeah, that was a nice, pleasant surprise. And you know, it's interesting, you know, went over and I'll give a shout out to the Fila booth that he was in, too. So went over to the Fila and walked in and saw he and his wife, Patricia, and asked him, said, hey, you know, I got a podcast and I'm doing it with my son, Brad. Would you come on and spend some time with us? And it took him about a millisecond to say, sure, right. You know, which was kind of good. Even though it was, you know, he was busy and had some other things to do, he came over and spent some good time with us and gave us a lot of entertaining stuff.
Right.
To be honest with you, it was good fun.
Does the guy age? I mean, he looks amazing, and every time I see him, he almost looks younger. It was good to see him. I hadn't seen him in a handful of years. It felt like, and hadn't seen Patricia either. They both looked great, and they were super friendly and happy, and it was a great time to have him on the pod, and it was just fun to sit there and watch you guys kind of go back and forth.
Yeah, the fun part of it, Brett, is you're right. He was relaxed, and you know, we haven't seen each other in a number of years also. And you know, it's funny, you know, growing up, you know, we were such competitors, and you know, he played exhibitions with Vitas, and I played exhibitions with Nasty, and you know, but we saw each other. But it's almost like, you know, we kind of just pick up where we leave off, and you know, which is, you know, for me, it is the best. And that means that, you know, there's more to, you know, to a friendship like that than, you know, kind of more than just surface. And it was great to hang with him and to see him. And you know, I told him, I said, you know, we got to stay in touch more and, you know, keep up with each other and try to run into each other. You know, life's getting short for us too. And you know, hopefully not too short, but, you know, we got to, you know, run into each other more and spend some time.
Yeah, definitely. I just think it was cool that now you guys are, you know, way out of your competitive. I mean, you'll always be competitive, but you're not in that competitive stage anymore. And you're just like two old work buddies, essentially, you know, that used to work together for 25 years or 20 years. And then now you've, you know, stopped working or retired or whatever it is. And now you've fallen out of touch a little bit. But then right when you guys see each other, you just pick up right where you left off. And you've gone through so many battles and wars and stuff. And it's just kind of cool to sit there and watch you guys laugh and smile and joke around.
Yeah, he goes to some tennis. He goes to, you know, to Wimbledon once in a while, and goes to the French or Monte Carlo and in events like that. So
he does the Laver Cup.
He's at Laver Cup. Yeah, he's the coach there, and he still gets around quite a bit, a little more than than I do. And it was interesting talking to him about, you know, the players and you know, how they're all friends of his. And I think that's more, you know, from being a coach of the Laver's Cup and getting to know a lot of the players, you know, a little bit more than just actually on the tennis court or around a tournament, more of an intimate setting. So he's, you know, he keeps up to date on the players and their play and what they have to do to become better and to kind of take over the number 1, 2, 3 spot in the world when, you know, the three of Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic are, you know, really coming to an end. And it was as much as we like the, you know, on the podcast, there was some, you know, very entertaining and fun stuff to talk about when we were just, you know, walking back and forth to the, you know, to the suites and so forth. And next time I'll tape that also. That was some pretty enlightening stuff too.
Yeah. Right. I think we could have talked to him for another hour or two, but we didn't want to monopolize his time since he has a lot of commitments and stuff being in the desert just for the short time that he was. But, it brought back a lot of memories, you know, like when I was in, you know, high school, you had the senior tour and every summer I'd go with you on the senior tour and, you know, hang out with a lot of those guys, you know, with Willie and then go play golf with Vitas and, you know, and hang out with Dibs and, you know, just all the different guys, Lloydie and all the cool people that, you know, you knew them as players. And then since I'm always on your side as a kid growing up, you know, those are the guys you're playing against. And so it was cool to be able to get to know them as like people, you know, and see that they're just normal people and they're cool and they're just like us and, you know, they're just from different places and, you know, whatever. And so, it was just fun to see Bjorn because we did so much on the senior tour and hung out so much and got into some trouble and in a good way. and it was just fun to see him and to catch up. And you know, I feel like, you know, give it a year, we could have him on again and do another hour or two.
Oh, you know what? I think he enjoyed it, being on as much as we enjoyed having him. And I think that, you know, was shown by, you know, by a lot of his conversation. I mean, he was, you know, down and honest with us, you know, on a lot of things and, you know, things that, you know, kind of, you know, been pushed aside for years and years and years, you know, with, you know, for example, his, you know, when he left the tour, when he was 26 years old, he was very honest with us and upfront. And I kind of think that, you know, age kind of cures a lot of things and why he made some decisions, you know, back then, you know, where that was his and he stuck with it and went through with it. And has come out in his life. It seems very, very happy, very relaxed and just continuing on, which is always good to see.
Yeah, I thought that was cool, and he seems like he's in a really good place in life. You know, he seems like relaxed and laid back, and he just, you know, we talked about it. He just goes around getting to be Bjorn Borg, you know, and he's just this just chill, laid back dude. And you know, he shows up, he is who he is, and people love him, and we were lucky enough to have him on the pod, and hope to get him on again soon.
Yeah. And they also had some tennis in the desert, didn't they? I mean, we found some time to go watch a little bit of tennis in between, you know, playing golf and on some great courses too, by the way.
Yeah. We talked with Bjorn about it when we talked about who we thought would be next and, you know, who ends up winning on the men's side is Carlos Alcaraz. We talked a little bit about him. Looking back now, ridiculously priced at 6.5-1 pre-tournament to win the event, didn't drop a set. And made Medvedev, who had won 19 straight matches coming in, you know, look silly out there, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we got to watch some tennis. We actually were there. We went and watched an Alcaraz match. He played his first round against Kokkinakis. You sat up in the booth, you in the media area, and I went down and snapped some photos. Lucky enough to get a media credential, and they let me down and snap a few photos in the photo well with some of my buddies. What'd you think?
You got a little TV time also down there.
So they snuck me on there. Uh-oh, not good. You know, the ratings went down quickly when that happened. But I want to get your take. What'd you think about watching Alcaraz in person for the first time since you've only, you know, me too. I hadn't seen him before except on TV.
Yeah. You know, it's so different to watch it in person than on TV. But, you know, the one thing that really stood out, you know, with me, I mean, he's young, 19, 20 years old, and he has the desire. You can tell, you know, the way he goes about his business. I mean, he seems to be playing at a very mature level for, you know, for a 19 or 20 year old kid who's, you know, I mean, even though he has won the U.S. Open, you know, you still a lot of things can happen, and he's still gaining experience and so forth, but he seems to have that desire to be the best and he is right now. He's gone to number one in the world, and, you know, rightfully so. I mean, you go out and play in a tournament like that was in the desert, and you come out winning and not losing a set and beating the players that he's beaten, you know, he deserves it. But, you know, he's got the attitude, you can tell. And if he stays healthy and keeps that desire and keeps that attitude and keeps that wanting to, you know, continue to improve and to be better with each match, with each tournament, then, you know, he's going to be hard to stop. And, you know, I watched over the course of the last years or a couple of years, I've watched a lot of these young guys coming up. None have stood out in those departments, the desire department and the willingness to give it everything every time you go out there like he has. And he sure proved that when I was watching him in person.
Yeah, definitely. Watching him courtside, he is so aggressive. You know, I think that's the one thing when you hear about him, or you know, he's always Spanish and he loves playing on clay and slower surfaces. You think he's going to be more like Rafa, where he's playing, you know, 6, 7, 8 feet behind the baseline and using that extra time and that. But he's up on the baseline. You know, he's hugging the baseline a lot more, and he's always looking to move forward. You know, he's super aggressive, where I think almost like his aggressiveness almost hurts him sometimes, where like if he just hits another ball or two, you know, the other guy might miss, and then he goes for a little too much and misses. But I think that's something that, like, he'll, you know, get under control easily in the next couple of years. He's still just 19 years old, but yeah, he's different. You know, he's like, I think he is kind of the hybrid guy that we always talk about. I think, you know, for the last couple of years, we thought it might be Tsitsipas, but Tsitsipas has hit a little bit of a wall, and, you know, he's still a great player, but we're still waiting for him to maybe take that next step and try and get a grand slam. But it seems like Alcaraz, it could be that guy.
I like the analogy there better. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, say, you know, is he not aggressive enough or whatever. It's kind of like, you know, in a comparison to golf, you can teach, you can't teach distance. You get up there. And I remember when you first started taking golf lessons, they said, just get up there and hit it as far as you can. We'll go find it. Mm-hmm. So you can't teach distance, but you can bring in the dispersion, you know, and it's kind of like tennis. I'd rather him be aggressive and understanding the value in that and what it means, you know, to take away that split second from your opponent, to catch the ball a little bit earlier and, you know, get him on the run or whatever it takes. And then let him understand the value of also hitting that one extra ball. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't teach that aggressiveness. I think that has to come. It has to be in you and you want to do that, but the other you can teach, you know, the hitting the one more ball and to change the pace and things like that is teachable. But I think, you know, with the way he's going, you know, the courts seem to be, you know, we talk about that all the time too. And, you know, seeing it in person, just, you know, how high the ball bounces on all surfaces, and it bounces up and gives all the players a chance to really step in and whack it. And you know, he has the value of hitting a slice and, you know, the shorter angles and mixing in a drop shot and not getting discouraged if you come to the net and you get passed, mm-hmm. you know, that you still continue on and, you know, understand, well, you know, maybe he won that one, but, you know, how many times is he going to win that?
Right.
You know, so you just keep putting the pressure on them. And, you know, if you can get that, you know, that hybrid feeling of understanding the value of that and the old school attitude with a modern day hard hitting game, boy, that's going to be tough to beat.
Right. I mean, his drop shot is ridiculous already. He used it. I mean, in one game against Medvedev, he used it like 3 points in a row to like close out a game. But you're right.
But also that he's got court sense because he senses his opponent so far back.
Mm-hmm.
I keep going back to this. Even if you miss it, it puts it in your opponent's mind that, hey, he's just not going to stand back and bang the ball back to me. He's going to, you know, move me around, because most everybody, I would say 99% of everybody, moves well horizontally across the baseline. Mm-hmm. But moving forward is different. And especially, you know, that extra 4 or 5 or 6 feet when you're back so deep, but you know, you're just putting that extra strain on your body. And he understands that. So, hey, keep it going.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely, his tennis IQ seems to be pretty high, especially when you think he's just 19. You know, like you said, he understands situations and, oh, look, my, you know, Medvedev's 8 feet behind the baseline, drop shot time. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or, you know, because like it seems like a lot of the guys, like we've talked about before, and even with Borg, how like these points will get into like a pattern where it almost seems like it's a drill, you know, where like both players get into their comfort zone, you know, and then they're both comfortable right. playing the other guy in his comfort zone. You know, so like backhand to backhand or whatever it is. And then, but that, you don't want that. You don't want the other guy to be in his comfort zone. You want to always pull him out of his comfort zone. And so I think Alcaraz is great at that. You know, oh, you're far back. Okay, now I'm going to drop shot you. Oh, you're trying to hug the baseline, play the drop shot. Now I'm going to hit it, you know, deep with a lot of back, you know, topspin to kick it back deep into the court, you right. know? So it just seems like his IQ and his court awareness plus his aggressiveness, like you said, the things where he maybe is a little too aggressive. That's like me in golf when I'm like, well, I'd rather miss the ball, my putt 3 feet long than 2 or 3 feet short. You know, it never has a chance if it is short. It has a chance if it goes long. Or like
exactly.
you used to teach me, don't miss it in the net, miss it in the fence. You can bring the fence down. The net, it's never had a shot. You know what I mean? What right. was it going to do? Barely get over the net, you know, if it didn't hit it?
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah, good. You remember that. That makes me feel good. You remember that.
I took
brother.
Some notes. Okay. It didn't work on the court so well, but I took some notes.
Yeah, perfect. Well, I mean, he had a good week. Even Medvedev had a good week getting to the finals. And, you know, I know he won 19 matches in a row. And actually, you had a great comment before when the odds came out for that. You know, how can you win 19 matches in a row like that and be an underdog?
Yeah, but they were right.
Yeah,
they were right.
Yeah, well, they were right in a big way.
What do you think about the stuff with Medvedev complaining about the court? Because I sent you, you know, we heard about it when we were down there for the one match, and then we left, and then he, you know, I can't think, it was against Zverev. He was like, his bitching about it, and you know, saying it's too slow. This is a joke. This is supposed to be a hard court. I'm a hard court specialist. I should know. But then I saw an interesting tweet from Barbora Krejčíková, who we saw out there, the Czech player, and she said, uh-huh. you know, Medvedev is funny. She's like, he played all of his matches on the main court. And he's like, and she was like, the main court was the fastest of the four courts. She's like, I know, because I played on all four courts, because she plays singles and doubles. So she was like on court four for a doubles and then one, you know, so she played all four right. courts. And so like listening to her, court one was the fastest of the four. And then he's still complaining about it. So I just wanted to get your take. Would that be something? Is that something like you noticed while watching, you know, the couple sets that we watched, a couple matches, that the ball bounces? It's so hard to hit winners through the court. And then you were kind of like Medvedev, as a flat ball, you know, take time away, you know, hit it low over the net, not a lot of topspin player. So what did you think about that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we've talked about this many times before too, Brett, that, you know, seems like, yeah, even the clay at Roland Garros and the grass at Wimbledon they brought the courts down to fit the game, and you know, talking with Bjorn on the side, you know, kind of he threw that out exactly the same way, that you know, the way the players play. But you know, back in my day, the courts were much different. The ball bounced a lot lower and would really shoot through the court because of the speed of the courts. Also, the balls were faster. You know, that if, you know, I hit a flat ball, so the ball would, you know, not only move quicker through the air, but when it would hit, it would skip and go through the court. But, you know, most everybody now plays with the, you know, the same way, with more or less the frying pan grip and, you know, the real Western grip. To get down low, you know, that's one thing Pancho Segura always used to tell me, is stay low, buddy. Stay low, because the ball was coming through. If you don't bend your knees and get down to it, you know, if you bend your knees now, it seems like the ball would just jump over your head. And because all the guys are hit with such topspin, with the equipment and the strings and the balls being so slow. So, you know, to have a slow court, no wonder they just stand back and, you know, are able to have a rally of, you know, 10, 12, 15, 18 balls. You know, it's very difficult to put the ball away. But saying that, I mean, these kids are swinging so hard at the ball and with the lighter racket and having to generate that speed, you know, and all of that, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what the change is going to be. Are they going to, what's going to hurt them? You know, in right. my generation, it was knees and hips and ankles and backs. And, you know, this is going to be shoulders and wrists and necks and
elbow,
you know, and elbow. And so it's going to be interesting to see, but you know, you'd think that, you'd want it a little bit faster, but I know why, because, you know, most of the players are so big and tall and their serve is so powerful that they had to do something to allow, you know, for some points, because I remember back on the grass, some of the big servers back in my day, Rospo Tanner, for instance, and Kevin Curran, you know, they're go games go by where you didn't even see the ball, didn't even touch it.
Right.
You know, so, you know, maybe they've done that, you know, for more rallies, but, you know, maybe it'd be a good thing to find a happy medium somewhere and to give these guys a chance to, you know, to in the point a little bit early too, if they could.
Right. Well, when we first got there, we went and checked in with, Ray Moore, who, you know, works, behind the scenes at the tournament. And he was just telling us a little inside information. This was early in the event that they tried to take some of the sand out of the paint. That's how they, right. you know, that's how you make a court slower, faster outdoors, is you add sand to the paint, and then that makes it more gritty, favorite word, gritty, and that slows yeah. the ball down. The ball catches it and then, you know, kicks it up in the air and all that stuff. And he said they tried to take some of the sand out, but it seemed like it was still like a pretty slow event. I mean, you still had Carlos winning, who, you know, those conditions favor him. But I was a little surprised Medvedev made that deep a run. I thought Zverev might get him there in the quarters. But, you know, he came through there and played a good match. And then on the women's side, we had kind of connections to both winners. We didn't see Sabalenka, but we ran into Rybakina. Elena Rybakina, right. the winner, who is now kind of just a top two, three, four, you know, player on the WTA tour. Her last 9 or 10 months, she didn't get her ranking points for Wimbledon, but she wins Wimbledon, runner up at Australia, and now wins the first Masters 1000 of the year on hard courts in America, in Indian Wells. And she's like, you know, people are like, oh, she doesn't have reactions, she barely celebrates, but she just seems like this, she's just a little different, you know, she handles it calm, she smiles and, you know, waves, and then they interviewed her and she did her stuff in the trophy ceremony. She seems like a super nice girl and just, you know, she might just be a little shy and handle success differently than a lot of the other people. And I don't know, she's growing on me. I like watching her play and I was happy to see her win.
Yeah, it's good that, you know, she's found her niche and going about her business in her way and what allows her, you know, to play successful tennis. You know, not everybody is Borg. Not everybody is Sampras. Not everybody is Gerolaitis. Not everybody is Nastasi. Not everybody is Connors. You got to find your own way and what, not only with your game, but also with your emotions, because your emotions, you know, control a lot of what goes on out there too, and the way you play. So, you know, finding that and feeling comfortable, not only in your game, but in your emotions and your attitude is just as important. And it seems to me, you know, you said it, you know, she still smiles, but you know, she's a little bit shy. Well, that's okay. It's not affecting her tennis, you right. know, and the end result is the tennis results are what counts. You know, you're not out there to win a popularity contest. You're out there to win a tennis match and whatever it takes to win that tennis match and how to go about it. And she seems to be very comfortable in the way she's going about it, especially with the results the last, what, 9, 10 months,
yeah.
you know, something like that. So, yeah, a good honor. I mean, you know, it's, you know, that's not an easy thing to do. She must have some, either it's her and she's understands the value in that, or she has some good people around her that understand that have, you know, kind of helped her along with that. But whatever or whoever, however it happened, she's doing a good job at it.
Yep.
Definitely. What's better than finding quality candidates? Finding them instantly. For a powerful hiring partner, you need Indeed. Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. Don't spend hours on multiple job sites looking for candidates with the right skills when you can do that all with Indeed. Find top talent fast with Indeed's suite of powerful hiring tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. Hate waiting? Indeed's U.S. data shows that over 80% of Indeed employers find quality candidates whose resume on Indeed matches their job description the moment they sponsor a job. The thing I like most is the instant match on Indeed. I don't have a lot of time. I'm busy going here, going there, working on the podcast, working at my job. So that helps me out when I'm looking to hire somebody on the go. Candidates you invite apply through Instant Match are three times more likely to apply to a job than candidates who only see a search according to U.S. Indeed data. Join over 3 million businesses worldwide using Indeed to hire great talent fast. Indeed knows that when you're doing everything for your company, you can't afford to overspend on hiring. Visit Indeed.com/Connors to start hiring now. Just go to Indeed.com/Connors. Indeed.com/Connors. Terms and conditions apply. Cost per application, pricing not available for everyone. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Our girl Sabby, with another good result, AO winner, comes back after losing, I think it was in Dubai a little early, in a tough three setter to Krejcikova, comes back, you know, runner up, good result. And, it's kind of cool because we talked, you know, into last year, started this year, how we wanted someone to step up to be kind of number two on the WTA, you know, Iga's right. Obviously this number, this, you know, full and away a number one. But there was kind of a back and forth. This person's two. Now this person's two. Now this person's two. But since then, not only has one person stepped up, two. You know, you could say now there's kind of like a top three where you're like these three. Pagula's in there, but she's a little on the outside. Just with she needs like another big Grand Slam result. But you've got Iga, Rybakina, and Sabby now kind of cemented as those top three. I know the rankings might not be 1, 2, 3. But if you're going into an event, like, you know, who are you favoring? You know, I think I think those three are pretty solid. And we were standing next to her getting some lunch, and she might be taller than me. I mean, I'm 6'3".
I know. I saw that. But she still moves.
Oh, hell yeah.
You look at the guys and, you know, how tall they are and the power that they have. The women play the same way.
Yep.
You know, and getting around the court and having the power and understanding that is, I'm happy to see with Serena kind of stepping aside and Sharapova stepping aside. And, you know, we've talked about this often, Brett, that, you know, who's going to step up to be number 2, 3, 4, 5. I think that they're not satisfied. They're looking, they're eyeing that number one, even though Iga's out in front by a good chunk. There's still a lot of tennis to play, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of matches for everybody to play here, and they're going to be playing against each other in different situations and different surfaces and different conditions and all of that, and it's going to be interesting to see with that taste of success. You know, sometimes that's all it takes is, well, you know, I've had this taste and I like it, but I'm not really sure. And then all of a sudden you win in Australia or you win a Wimbledon and then you win a Masters 1000. Then all of a sudden, whoa, I'm on it. I like what's happening here. So keep it going and keep on the roll as long as you can.
Yep.
Pretty good.
Yep, definitely. So, happy to see that. Saw some news today. Iga pulled out of Miami. So she won the Sunshine Double last year. She'll drop those points, has a rib injury. I guess she picked up at Indian Wells. I mean, she was rolling, bagels and breadsticks for everyone until she ran into Rybakina, who's beaten her now twice in a row, got her at AO in straights and now beat her 2-2 last week. So, Rybakina's a thumper. I mean, she crushes it cross court. Like when she starts picking up her down the line and starts switching it up, because you got to protect that corner when she's going cross court and can just go down the line. Like, she's going to be tough to beat while we were out there in Palm Springs. Just, we got 3 days. We played with some pretty good hosts. We played the Plantation course, which is an old palm tree plantation where they used to grow palm trees and people would buy them. And they said, hey, let's turn this into a golf course. Which is pretty,
and they did a magnificent job too, by the way. I mean, it was such a great course, very difficult. We met up with our friend Richie Bree, but we stayed with him. But he has a friend Mark who hosted us at the Plantation, which was great. So, going back, there's great golf in the desert, but that's one certainly I'll go back to. What about you, Brett?
Yeah, I loved it. Just being a, amateur photographer kind of guy, just there's no bad backdrop. There's literally palm trees everywhere. And, we put a couple pictures up there, multiple rows deep. If you, a little off the center of the fairway, it punishes you. But and really, really cool around sunset where you get those nice silhouettes of the palm trees in the background. I really liked it.
Yeah, it was beautiful, and we did play till dark, which which now with this time of year with the time change makes it better to play later. So I'm looking forward to more golf like that, and also going back down to Palm Springs. That was great fun.
Yeah, well, we actually played it twice. We played 3 days. I played 3 days. You played four, but we played Plantation twice, and then we played a course called what was it? It was called the Quarry.
The Quarry.
The Quarry. Yeah, that's right.
Which was great also, but so different. We go from palm trees, that line the course, and, with great visuals also. But then now we play the quarry, which is built back into the mountains. Mm-hmm. Every hole had such a great view, and at the time we were there, better the snow on the mountains too made for such a great backdrop. But both different kinds of golf, both of them were different, don't you think?
Yeah, I liked them both. The quarry, you could tell they had free rein. It seemed like with a lot more land, where there's one hole and it reaches all the way up here, and then, you don't see another hole for like a couple hundred yards. You got to drive a little bit sometimes. Whereas Plantation's more like, holes are next to each other. They have the benefit of having more land for the quarry. So different types, but I loved them both. Would love to play again, but there's so many good golf courses out there. It's hard to not want to try and get back out there and play some more.
Yeah, but I'd like to give a shout out to our hosts too, Mark. I mentioned already, and John and Greg at the Quarry, and the times that we had, and then going out and having a bite to eat afterwards. I mean, we went down there to get around the tennis, which was fun, and do our podcast, and we had a great podcast. But when we first left to go down there, you said it. We're going to go down. We're going to watch a little tennis, have some great food, play some great golf. And yes, we did.
Yeah,
it was a great 4 or 5 day getaway from Santa Barbara and you from LA, and it really, restarted my engine to come back and, okay, I had a great time, and now, get back whatever I'm doing, get back to work and do that. So it was, we'll have to do it again more often.
Yep. And, it's a small world down there. We played 18 at the quarry with Greg, and then the next night we played somewhere else. And then we went and watched Carlos in the night session once it got dark, and I'm down in the photographer's pit, and I hear someone go, "Psst, Brett," psst, and I look over my shoulder, and it's Greg in the front row behind me with his,
that's a classic. That's pretty good.
With his friends. So
who would have thought that? But, everybody we played with down there, they hosted us so nicely, but the big tennis fans, mm-hmm. All of them, had tickets to the tennis, and we're looking forward to going, and they started firing off names, who are you going to see? Well, we're going to see Alcaraz, we're going to see him, and he's going to win the tournament, but I don't know, this guy, they knew their tennis,
right?
Which was, we're out playing golf, but they're talking golf, talking tennis. It was a great match, great matchup. It's good fun.
Great times. It's hard not to be a little bit of a tennis fan when you have such a great tournament in your backyard, but I had a lot of fun playing golf, and look forward to doing it again next year. So let's switch to Miami real quick. Don't want to get too much into it, but just tell me what it was like. What, did it used to be like this when you played? Was it Indian Wells and then you'd go down to Miami?
Now you're testing my memory. That's a bad thing. We would have a nice little circuit here in California with Las Vegas, the Alan King Classic sticking in there, and then Florida. Yeah, it was pretty close,
or but pretty
we had
close.
A couple tournaments here. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was all pretty close around to keep the, you know, the same surface and on the hard courts and things. But Miami was always a big event for us too back in the day, and as well as Palm Springs, and you know, and it's not bad places to go anyway, to go and spend a week or 10 days in Palm Springs and then the same in Miami. You know, the weather's great, the food's great, you know, the tennis is great. So it's not too bad having back-to-back tournaments like that.
No. And it's like, it's tough to win it. Like they call it the Sunshine Double. Not too many players have won back-to-back. Carlos won Miami last year, so he has the chance now to win it this year. Who do you like? Anything pop out, or have you not had a chance to look at it? I know it's still early. It's just getting underway today.
No, I haven't. Not really looking, but you know, I'm looking at two things. One, I'm looking at Medvedev, how he takes the beating, mm-hmm. and if he comes back and says, okay, I was in the final, but I'm not satisfied with that. So what do I have to do? I know it's a long 8 or 10 days that they go through, and then to travel to Miami, but still, also Alcaraz, you know, he's got to be just brimming with confidence. I mean, the way he played and, you know, going through that tournament, not losing a set, then beating Medvedev the way he did. I mean, his confidence has got to be at an all-time high. And plus, it's hard courts. Mm-hmm. You know, you say that clay's his favorite. Now he's, you know, winning decisively on hard courts like that. I mean, he's got to feel his game is just almost right where it wants it to be, especially going into, you know, the French coming up, and, you know, you don't want to overplay, you got to, you know, keep this level, but the French is coming up, Wimbledon's coming up. And, you know, if he keeps at this level with this confidence, he's going to be tough on all surfaces.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just looking forward to it. I go in after we record this, I'm doing the PM, the later shift this week at Tennis Channel. So that'll be fun. I'm looking to see how Carlos bounces back, also to see how Rybakina does. Like, does she come back and want, you know, want more, or does she, you know, kind of rest on a good week last week? I think she'll come out and still play well. Haven't looked at her draw, but, Miami's a fun one. It's always funny to me that it's moved to the parking lot of my favorite football team, the Dolphins. It's like kind of a funny setup, but we'll see how it goes. Next week we'll have a little more on it, as we'll be into the second week meet of the tournament. And I know there's a little golf tournament going on. Used to be in Tucson, now it's in Austin, Texas, the World Match Play Championship. Are you watching any of this?
It's always on in the background. You know, so, you know, if I'm walking through and, I stop and, you know, watch a little bit, seeing if I can pick up any tips. I'm always looking to try to improve, and, you know, how can it be bad watching the best players in the world do their thing? So yes, of course I'm watching. Yes, I am.
Nice. Nice. Anyone you're looking at to win it? What do you think? It's hard to bet against John Rahm.
Yeah, it's hard to bet against Rahm. It's hard to bet against Rory. It's, but there's some sneaky, you know, some Europeans that come over, like Minwoo Lee is, I saw him play. He came, he was one down on 17 and ended up winning two holes in a row to move forward. And I mean, a lot of these guys are getting an opportunity to play this event for the first time. And, you know, they come in and they're ready to win. They've won on the European tour and they've won around the world. So it'll be interesting to, you know, to see who steps up and challenges, the number one seeds in all brackets. So yeah, I'm interested. I like match play too. I like that too. That you can have a bad hole. It's only one hole. You know, and then to come back and you can be aggressive and make things happen. So yeah, I'm interested and I'll be watching it.
Yeah, me too. I'll be following along. Austin seems to be blowing up as a sports city. I mean, I know they've always been a good one, but now they have this. They had a tennis tournament earlier in the year. They have a soccer team, MLS. You know, they got the college there and everything. So Austin, pretty good town, pretty good sports town.
Yeah, and they're getting crowded. A lot of people from California moving moving out of California and moving Texas way. And I was in Austin, I guess it was 3 or 4 months ago, doing an event for our friend Andy Roddick, and I could barely recognize it. You know, it is grown so much, and the building and just everything that's going on was really quite exciting. So, Austin is, taking its place on the major stage, which is great.
Yep. Anything else going on you want to talk about? What do you got going on the rest of the day?
I'm going to do a little more work here and try to avoid the raindrops as they come back again, and get ready to, finish out my day and lay low. So, my golf games, all courses are a little bit soaked, and so playing the golf is going to be put on the back burner. But you've got work to get to at about 1:30. You got to get moving. So
all
I'm
going to
say is, as always, it's been great to be with you, and you can follow me at Jimmy Connors on Twitter. Follow the podcast at Advantage Connors.
Mm-hmm.
You can follow Brett at Brett_Connors.
You're getting so good at this. It's unreal.
I think I'm missing one.
At ADV Connors. You could throw that one.
At ADV Connors. Right. So I just want to say one thing, better to all our listeners out there. I hope you enjoyed the podcast with Bjorn. It was great to have him on, and hopefully we get him on again, but keep following us. We got a lot of plans, more interesting guests, and keep sending in your questions. Anything you want to know about, we're happy to discuss it. And if we don't know anything about it, we'll try to find something out. So we'll work on it.
We'll work on it.
But stay listening. We appreciate you being a part of us.
Yep. All right. Have a good day. I'm going to get in the shower and head to work, and I will check in with you later. And everyone out there, peace.